the chairperson of International Relations and Cooperation in the National Assembly, co-chairing this meeting with Honorable Chair Tam Fokeng, who is the chairperson of the Select Committee. This being a joint meeting, that's why we had to co-chair. Mine is just to do this opening. Welcome you all, and in particular the representatives of the department who are here to brief us. Seeing that we have a number of constraints, a number of members through other committees are out on oversight visits, and also realizing that this is only an information session where we must just be given that information and seek clarity. The processes on how to take forward that information will still have to be defined. We are agreeing that we must begin, because already a number of colleagues have indicated that at 11, after 11, they have to go for other meetings. So we will divide this into two sessions. The first session, the hour, is the presentation by the department and all that stuff. But at 11 o'clock, we must be done so that we go into our separate committees, because there is some work which has to be done. I know that the international relations will be moving into what venue, Bulero? Sorry? M201. That's where international relations will be moving into. So without any waste of time, I will hand over to my co-chair, the chairperson of the Select Committee. But what I do not want to do, we can't start talking about apologies and so on, because you can see that if we want to talk about a forum, we will be seated with a problem. Let's just receive the information. But as to whether there's anything we will have to process, then you revert back to the issues of quorum. Honorable Mogu.
Thank you, Chair. No, I just wanted to express a little bit of a concern that we are receiving these documents at such a short notice that we have not had time to read through them. That I feel that we can't make meaningful contribution to a meeting of this nature, even if it's just information. But it's nice to absorb information before one comes to the meeting. I feel handicapped when I come to a meeting and I've not prepared myself to read through the documentation. So I don't know whether in future we should have some kind of given information documents before the meeting, so that we can digest the information, so that when it comes to the meeting, we already have a picture of what we're going to discuss. Thank you, Chair.
No, I think that is a genuine concern. That's a genuine concern, especially when we deal with these issues of the department. These agreements, they come hush, that we have to do them quickly. It seems as if it's a tendency, and I remember with the previous ones, we did raise concerns in relation to that. But can we park that so that we deal with it later on? And maybe I hand over to my co-chair. Over to you, Honorable.
Thank you very much, Honorable Nessie. Good morning, Honorable Members. Without any waste of time, I'll also hand over to the delegation from the department to continue the briefing. Over to you, sir.
Good morning, everybody. Honorable Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on International Relations and Cooperation, Mr. Chula Sumasi, Honorable Chairperson of the Select Committee on Security and Constitutional Development, Mr. Mufukeng, and other Honorable Members of Parliament. We will try to be as succinct as telegraphic as much as we can, assuming that you would have received a narrative document on the subject matter before us here, before, and that the slide presentation here is basically just an attempt to lift out the salient features of that narrative document, which has already been presented before. In terms of the content of our presentation today, we'll just cover four areas, mainly the significance of the CCW, that is the Convention on Certain Injurious Weapons, on the use of certain conventional weapons which may be deemed to be excessively injurious or to have indiscriminate effects. And then, secondly, we'll touch on the evolution of this instrument, and thirdly, South African participation in the CCW, and why we're here, and what is to be done. The first three issues I would like to highlight on the significance of the CCW is that it is the only legally binding international arms control instrument that addresses a range of diverse conventional weapons. For an example, mines, booby traps, leather binding weapons, and even incendiary weapons. The details of these weapons are covered in the various protocols that we have mentioned in the narrative document we have provided. Secondly, the CCW is important because it addresses weapons that are seriously injurious or have indiscriminate effects. An example I would like to highlight here is the explosive remnants of war, which have a very debilitating factor on post-conflict reconstruction. These include landmines that have not been picked up. These include all kinds of material that always has an adverse effect on socio-economic development. Thirdly, the CCW is important because it's one of the instruments within the whole arms control package internationally that seeks to contain the proliferation of certain weapons and also at the same time ban other types of weapons. Now, on the proliferation, non-proliferation part, I would highlight one example we're familiar with, which is the issue of landmines. This is a very outstanding example of non-proliferation. And arms control is on things like laser blinding weapons and incendiary weapons. So for these reasons, we believe that the CCW is a significant international measure that deserves our support and promotion by agreeing to the amendments that we have put before you, which have been agreed to within the international community as a whole. Now, the second part that I would like to look into is the evolution of the CCW. Just to highlight here that it's a relatively new kind of arms control measure that was adopted in the lead to the end of the Cold War, and that has proved a very sustainable measure in actually assisting the kind of non-proliferation, disarmament, and arms control measures that were envisaged to create a more stable and peaceful environment after the Cold War. So it served as some kind of a precursor. Just to briefly highlight that in 1980, negotiations were concluded on the CCW, and then it was opened for signature in 1981, and it entered into force in 1983. This has been a very rapid process in comparison to most disarmament, non-proliferation, and arms control measures. Within a period of 5 years, we were able to see quite a lot of change happening. It's because of the international community's appreciation of the adverse effects that these weapons have on socio-economic development, poverty alleviation, regional stability, and the maintenance of international peace and security. Thereafter, I think, in comparison to most similar treaties, the CCW has undergone a very rapid process of enrichment in the form of supplements in terms of amendments to the treaties as well as additional protocols. This has made it a very robust instrument that is indeed appropriate for the challenges in our time. Coming closer home, we need to also focus on what has been our role in the life of the CCW. Firstly, I would just like, in this respect, to touch on when did South Africa get involved in the CCW, and who are South Africa's participants in the CCW, and why South Africa felt imperative to participate in the activities of the CCW, and the forms of South African participation in the CCW. Coming to the first aspect, South Africa got involved in the activities of the CCW on 13 September 1995 when it deposited its instrument of ascension. I'm sorry for the misspelling there on the PowerPoint presentation. And then on 13 March 1996, South Africa became a full state party to the CCW. What this meant was that we had not only agreed to be bound by the CCW, but we had equally agreed that we'll be part of the mainstream activities of this important convention. The second aspect I would like to touch on is the participants from our country in the activities of the CCW. First, it is the Department of International Relations, which I must say its primary responsibility is to ensure that it serves as an interface with the international community in respect of the CCW, and also to be the lead department in ensuring that South Africa complies with its convention obligations in respect of this treaty. The second role player is the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, which is a crucial department in the form of legal advice on our participation in the whole range of activities associated with the CCW. Then the Department of Defense and Veteran Affairs. This is a lead department that addresses the military aspects of the CCW in terms of ensuring that all our armaments, production, transfer, and all that are in accordance with the CCW. Now, civil society is yet another crucial participant in the activities of the CCW, more especially on the question of mines and the explosive remnants of war. These are the people that go ahead on demining exercises. These are the people that are always at the forefront of trying to draw the attention of the international community on explosive remnants of war strewn all over post-conflict areas where development, use of the land, and all that is hampered because of this. Now, why are we participating in the CCW? Briefly, this is to say that CCW is a very appropriate instrument in creating a conducive environment for stability to prosper. Here by stability, we mean more specifically regional stability in the terms of removing the armaments in certain regions of the world, and in particular our area. We know of the situation in Mozambique, how the question of landmines affected development in that part of the world, how in Angola landmines are still a question. So the removal of these mines tends to create a conducive environment for stability to prosper, hence the need to support the CCW's objectives and aims. Like most of the disarmament, non-proliferation and arms control measures, the CCW also contributes to the maintenance of international peace and security. Aspects of this which I would like to highlight is that it seeks to cap the proliferation of these excessively injurious weapons, and it also seeks to ban their transfer, and in this way engendering a conducive environment for the maintenance of international peace and security. The CCW, because of its humanitarian aspects and in terms of the attempts it makes in limiting and alleviating suffering caused by excessively injurious weapons, is a useful measure that requires our support. Then, what are the forms of South African participation in the CCW? As stated earlier on, we have various role players involved in the activities of the CCW, but the common objectives of all of us in pursuing the aims and objectives of the CCW, irrespective of our specific silo interests, are to promote and protect South Africa's interests in the whole gamut of activities that are undertaken in the context of the CCW. Secondly, is to ensure that there is national implementation of CCW obligations. And thirdly, that there is a utilization of the CCW as a platform to advance South Africa's foreign policy objectives on disarmament, non-proliferation, and arms control. And that the promotion of the objectives of CCW in respect of stability in post-conflict reconstruction is one of the ideal issues that informs our participation in this convention. We are therefore here in Cape Town to impress upon the honorables the need to obtain South Africa's acceptance of the amendment to Article 1 of the CCW, which in a nutshell broadens the scope of the treaty, and also to seek approval for consent to be bound by Protocol 5, which is the most recent amendment, the most recent addition to the treaty. We believe this will pave the way towards the country's ratification of the CCW. Now, why should we pursue all this? We believe that the actions we have recommended would constitute a significant gesture demonstrating South Africa's commitment to promote international peace and security, to limit and alleviate suffering caused by war and armed conflict, and of its responsibility to implement humanitarian and arms control policies to this end. We also believe that the recommended action would have no organizational implications to the structures or capabilities required in respect of the proposed amendment to Article 1 and Protocol 5. And Lastly, that the recommended action has no financial implications. Other safe to say that would just incur small addition in respect of servicing the meeting of state parties that is normally held in Switzerland, which would amount to a tune of about $1,000. If you compare the costs that are to be incurred and the issues that the convention addresses, the honorables, I guess, will concur with me that we need to support the objectives of this treaty by accepting to amend the Article 1 and also to be bound by Protocol 5. I thank you for your attention, and I hope I've not bored you, and I hope that we'll have more time for interaction so that you could quickly go to the other responsibilities that the chairperson has alluded to. I thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Dr. Gunn. Honorable members, we can now engage with the presentation. Honorable Colonel. Honorable Nzimande, Honorable Mishwe, and Honorable Mubu, last will be in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the department, to the department for a very brief and concise presentation. However, the most important part is not in the presentation. If I understand correctly, you're coming to Parliament not to get a ratification of the convention because we are signatory to that. We are looking at the two amendments of Article 1 and Protocol 5. The one is Article 1, if I understand correctly, to include conflicts in non-international nature. And Protocol 5 is about the explosive remnants of war. But in the presentation, I would suggest we have a briefing on what exactly is the amendment in Article 1 and what exactly is the amendment or the new Protocol 5. And that's not in the presentation. I came to this meeting in the hope that I will get an explanation or briefing on the amendment of Article 1 and Protocol 5, which I don't see. Because, secondly, we need to go then and decide whether, how do we take it forward? Are we going to have hearings on this? Are we going to make a report only to Parliament? Because it seems to be straightforward, Article 1 amendment and Protocol 5, despite the fact that you didn't present it. And I would think that if we need to approve amendments, we have to have a briefing on this, and we didn't have a briefing on the amendments. My last suggestion is on the role players. You mentioned a few departments. Another important role play in South Africa is the defense industry. And the defense industry in this country is represented by the Aerospace Maritime Defense, AMD. And I'm not sure whether you're also going to involve them, because they've got a huge network of manufacturers and role players. And so those are my suggestions.
Honorable Zimande.
Thank you, Chairperson, and sorry I was a bit late. I think I heard the speaker trying to talk to the implication or the motivation that he put last about, you know, why we had to be convinced and it's the right way to. Well, I certainly agree, Chair, with the need for us to accede to play a role in promotion and the furthering of the objectives that seeks to stabilize and that seeks to trade obligations and responsibilities internationally in this area, in this field of this protocol. But it's not just easy. He's just citing
$1,000, and that, I mean, I don't like to believe that, that it can just be that. I think it's more than that, and hopefully, Chair, it's the issue that we've been raising with the department, that we do like to have a full benefit of the actual financial implications of these things. You know, not just, you know, as he says, it's just 1,000, but Chair, he then got to tell us what more are the responsibilities. You see, we are also one of the countries, Chair, that are quick to ratify, but there is the subsequent responsibilities that come with our ratification, and the responsibilities and obligations we take, we are very bad. The Foreign Department can tell us so many of the conventions that we even fail to process a report. Simple thing to report on progress or no progress. We've been very bad. We hope that also, Chair, it has improved, I hope, in recent times, that whatever the responsibilities we take, you know, it's not just we just process these things through and we feel then we are good. We're part of the good of the good bodies that seem to be committed to these things. So, Chair, the concern or the concern really is, what are the responsibilities actually? Just to report, we will be required. We will be required to undertake certain practical responsibilities that might have implication. Thanks, Chair. But I think personally, I am convinced in terms of the motivation, good, despite the fact what Honourable Bornoff is saying, having not seen in the slides the presentation that talks to the actual wording of the. But I did. I think I did receive a document, and I did go through the document. Thanks, Chair.
Honourable Mishra.
Thank you, Chair President. Honourable Kornoff has touched on issues I wanted to raise. May I start by making a proposal that when we have to look at these other amendments that we are not given, that we need to simultaneously have a meeting with the Department of Justice and Defence so that we can learn from their experience and also save them time rather than go to different committees, different times, that we should all meet together so that when we make a decision, we make an informed one, having heard also what the lawyers are saying from the Justice and Consumer Development.
Another model.
Thank you, Chair. I think mine are just questions out of curiosity. Just how many countries have appended their signatures to this to the CCW? And why are these weapons still being produced if they are outlawed? And by which countries? Which countries are still making these weapons? And what sort of sanctions are available to those countries that are still using these weapons? And when they are found to still be using them, what are the sanctions that are meted out to those countries? Thank you.
To the African Union, and what is the one would be interested to whatever agreement, especially on matters of this nature, we have to actually do them within the understanding of the African Union position, as well as the regional and the position study, and so that we don't actually take unilateral position, and when we talk of regional integration, and the last one. Is where we talk about forms of RSA participation in the CCW. We talk of promotion and protection of workers' interests, and how do we do that? And the issue of the national limitation of CCW's obligations, are there any specific obligations that you may actually be taken on board?
Another one,
submitted to Parliament on the 24th of July 2007, if I'm right. A letter by the minister referring this matter to Parliament as the cabinet decision was only written on the 15th of October 2009. Just mark that time difference. 2007 July, 2009 October. That's more than 2 years. This is received by Parliament on the 18th of November 2009. Something from Pretoria, that's fine, 3 days. Something from Pretoria on the 15th of November is received here on the 18th, I mean on the 15th of October, it's received here on the 18th of November. Remember, that's between the executive and Parliament. I wonder if I send something to Matatiel, to my family, how long does it take? Now, it's only receiving attention here today. Sorry? Now, what I want to check, how does the department explain this? Because there's a huge gap in between. How do we explain this? Why all along this thing was not here? Why it took such a long time? I'm raising this co-chair because it's like it's not the first experience. You'd remember, I think, something we dealt with previously in our house. There are some similarities that these things, it's like they are just being brought here as a by the way. But I also agree with the colleagues that we need just an analysis of the amendments themselves. But on the first one, I'll just like to know the explanation.
Member.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to latch on to what Honorable Minister said. Does the time lapse have anything to do with our observer status? You will see in your last slide where you say that these costs are covered by PICO. If South Africa attends this meeting as an observer, why, when we are a signatory to, does it have anything to do with it? With the time lapse.
You can respond, Dr. Gupta.
Thank you, Chairperson. To begin with, on the question of the analysis of the amendments, I would like to sincerely apologize on behalf of the department on the assumption that when we kick-started the process, we had provided as an annexure the third amendment and the third protocol 5 to the communication. And it was an assumption that as these are received, they will be studied, and therefore there will be no need to address them separately, but rather to come and impress upon the honorables the need to take forward the process. It is an oversight on our side that we did not go that extra mile of touching on the analysis on the amendments and the additional protocol. But we had trusted that since these were attached to the documentation forwarded and were self-explanatory, the honorables would have time to read them and engage in terms of what do they exactly mean. But that said, I think the long and short of it, we do take the full responsibility of this oversight. Now, in terms of role players, we are aware of the defense industry and the crucial role it plays. And in the context of civil society, we don't want to, our approach has always been not to create artificial barriers between producers, non-producers or whatever, but to have a broad forum where the producers will also benefit from the inputs of the normal civil society that is engaged on other issues on what are the implications of their products. So that's why we did not specifically lift out industry and mention it per se. But they would be included within that category. So they are fully aware because the production and transfer sectors also relate to them. And in any case, they would be aware of all developments on this matter because within the NCACC, when they apply for permits to export and all that, those have a direct bearing on their products. Coming to the question of the implication of reporting and reporting and other financial responsibilities, I would like to highlight that we are not yet urging for ratification, but we are urging for us agreeing to the amendments, which we think they make a lot of sense in the sense that issues concerned here, the scope the scope of the convention itself, and also Article 5, the explosive remnants of war. We felt that these issues by far outweigh the financial implications that we're talking about. I have in the slides alluded to the question of stability so that there could be socio-economic development where people can go back to the land and plow. And I'd assumed that obviously this would outweigh the $1,000 that we are putting into the process. Of course, we are quick in ratification. This is also our concern as a department. But by the same token, we should be equally in a position to prioritize. And in our opinion, this is one particular instrument where the need to rectify at a later stage would be of utmost importance. But for now, the need to accept the amendments is equally important because of the benefits that will accrue if we take this step in this direction. The involvement of other role players, Honorable Reverend Musho, I think that the need to get this attended to as soon as possible, given the time lapses that the Honorable Mercy has already referred to, made it imperative for us to come here. And we've been in consultation with the other role players who have mandated us from the SNSC side come here and plead the case also on their behalf. But as for internal processes within Parliament itself, this I believe is within the hands of the Honourable, if I understood the question correctly. On the question of numbers and sanctions, this is a voluntary instrument that is still in the process of unfolding. Because of the amendments. Some decide to join, become a state party,
only to be bound by certain aspects and not the others, for national interests and for reasons of their own choice. For an example, the U.S. would not prefer to be bound by some of the protocols because of their situation, let's say the one on mines, because of their situation with DPRK and the Republic of Korea, where U.S. mines are used to mine the whole area there in the boundary. So it's difficult to really talk of numbers because the numbers depend on what are you talking about specifically. Now on sanctions is a very debatable issue in the contemporary international relations setting, because we are dealing with sovereign states who have the right to be members or who have the right to withdraw. Now, if a state party says, I'll be bound by this, not until in the review process of the legal instrument you create a measure that if you violate, then these are the punitive measures, would not achieve the goal. Now, rushing to put up the punitive measures before actually even gaining the buy-in into the lofty and noble objectives of the CCW itself would be tantamount to killing it, because then you are saying, if you don't want to comply, then you have these sanctions. We want the political buy-in, the moral binding on state parties to be bound by this. And as the convention develops in time, then we'd have measures, punitive measures, that will address non-compliance. And if you look at the history of all arms control, non-proliferation and disarmament measures, they almost follow the same measure. Because, like even the nuclear non-proliferation treaty, in as much as you are against nuclear weapons, we don't have something that deals with them decisively, that if you produce them, this is the sanction. But who are appealing politically and morally that please act. In terms of implications for the AU, SADC, and the promotion of the obligations of the protocol, I would like to state the following, that the AU is entirely behind this instrument, because, as you are well aware, Africa is one of the continents where we still even have landmines, for an example, from the Second World War, that are up there in Egypt, where we still have all kinds of mines that are within our backyard in places like Angola and Mozambique. The AU has been in the forefront of international campaigns on behalf of the continent to urge the donor community to assist in terms of dealing with these explosive remnants of war and in terms of curbing the use of things like landmines, booby traps, and laser blinding weaponry. So we have the AU fully behind us and SADC fully behind us. For that matter, in all the meetings of state parties, we have the African group organized as a regional grouping, which identifies common positions to advance at a certain meeting, and also how to make sure that these are integrated into the activities of the CCW. I must also highlight one thing, that on the other flip end, there is the question of benefits in terms of technical assistance and cooperation. We sit together as countries affected by these weapons and engage our partners from the north, the developing countries, to ask them to contribute generously to activities on demining and on dealing with explosive remnants of war.
So that addresses the question of the implementation of the obligations in part, because we cannot do it with our own funds, with our own limited national budgets. Therefore, this platform creates an ideal opportunity to engage the donor community so that we get the necessary wherewithal to be able to implement our obligations. Honorable Mercy, there's been reference here to the snail mail. I think this is a mouthful. There are certain things that when they come, they are an embarrassment, not only from the originator, but also for the end user, because it's like you are disrespecting the time of people that must consume and engage your proposal. This has not been something that comes out of our own creation, but what comes out of our own creation is the way we have designed systems. And I think this is an issue that needs to be addressed all the time. Are our systems serving our purposes in terms of swiftness in dealing with issues and in terms of conveying matters to the end users? And I think this needs attention. We have always been talking of the need not to work hard, but to work smart, because we have instruments like computers and all that that make us not to work hard. But we are not making these things to come to our aid to help us to work smart. And I think this is one issue that I will take up to my leadership in the department, that it is a cause of great concern, not only on this particular issue, but on a number of issues that the department brings forward. I think, if I may, it's the question of the paper trail and the submissions that we have to do in order to convey matters to the attention of our leadership. And at times, it even happens that by the time these things reach them, events have overtaken us. But I think this is a constructive observation that we need to heed and see how we can best address. I thank you.
Follow-up question, Honourable Nelson. Noted, Honourable Nelson.
Thank you, Chairperson. The question that I wanted to ask earlier on, I still don't have clarity. It's on page 8 on the issue that we say that the consent and to be bound by Protocol 5. I am not sure whether you're saying we have signed this, we've bound ourselves to Protocol 5, or we are still going to sign. That's why you need our lobbying and support. I'm still not clear about this. But on the other page, you know, because I understand the issue of Article 1, but now if you saw Protocol 5, I'm a bit drowsy, so that I can have a clear understanding. If you have bounded yourself, you must tell us, yes, you need our support to bound things. But second, the issue of civil society, I'm raising this was an issue that isn't raised, social issues of armaments, to say that, are you only going to concentrate on those which are detected, maybe like it has been in Angola, to say that there are certain areas whereby these armaments, these land mines are there. So I want to be clear, because the more, I want to be more clear on that one, because it's very crucial to us as in our country. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. It's just along the same lines. My question is just brief. Has South Africa signed the protocol? And when was it done? So that we must know what are the implications to the country. That's what we want to know. Secondly, it might be important that maybe we receive the explanatory notes on these amendments and this protocol, what is this session? Protocol 5, or whatever, that particular area. We receive some explanatory notes and all those implications. Why I'm saying this? So that as and when we approve, we ratify, or we accede, I don't know what we're going to do. It depends on what has been done. We also know exactly what we are doing. I raised the first question because I'm very concerned, Coach, that we are being made rubber stamps. I know that there was an apology at the beginning that the management, whoever is the management, would not be available. We accepted that apology. I want to suggest to this joint session that maybe we need another session, so that whoever is in the management must come and explain this thing of the lapses. Most of that is becoming a trend. And maybe taking on board the suggestion by Rev that maybe even people who are dealing with defense and justice must be on board. We can just have one session so that we're able to deal with whosoever. So I would firmly suggest then that we have another bite where we have these on board, but to explain this, the implications of the two amendments, and also get an explanation, whoever is the top management, on this question of the lapses.
Chairperson, thank you. I think Mr. Nimesi covered me. I think we started on the wrong foot by not explaining what exactly what is to be done. It is to amend Article 1, approve the amendment of Article 1, and 2, to approve the consent to a new Protocol 5. That's what I have. It's not a ratification. We've ratified, as I understand it. It's an approval of the amendment Article 1 and the consent to Protocol 5. We studied it. You, members have studied it. Let me ask a specific practical question. In Protocol 5, there's munitions management. In South Africa, we have at least 3 huge storage areas for ammunition. That depleted or dated ammunition. I think it's the R, I think it's Jan Kento, and somewhere in the northern Limpopo province. I don't know where exactly. But what is the implications for the Department of Defense and Military Veteran Affairs for the consenting to Protocol 5 in the munitions management? Because there's a lot of ammunition dated we can't use it anymore. As a matter of fact, it's dangerous. And secondly, it's also that article, or something B, 11B, and C is a training. It says all personnel involved in handling, transporting, use of explosive ordnance must be trained by the party involved. So there is also a cost implication, and the obligation for us to train members to deal with remnants of war. So those are the practical questions. Once we have a briefing on the Protocol 5, then the members can get involved in practical questions and how. And then you can explain to Parliament. Nobody disagrees that we should consent to Protocol 5 and accept amendment to Article 1. But there are practical issues that members want to engage the department to see what does it mean in practice. And that's what we're asking for.
Honourable Member? Noted, please.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. My question hasn't been responded to, the issue of our status, the observer status. Why do we enjoy observer status when we are a signatory to the process? Does it have anything to do with the lapse you know, the time lapse that the chair alluded to earlier.
Honourable Zimande.
Thanks, Coaches. I think once we seem to be concurring with what honourable colleagues are indicating towards, which means that a further engagement with the department should then be planned. I think, Coaches, we need just also to refer to, in fact, let me ask this question this way, as to, because, see, the United Nations, is just like Parliament, they do have the deadlines. Maybe the department is here now today pleading their case because they had to go to, is it Geneva? Yes, Switzerland, probably next week. Or sometime soon, you know, so, and therefore we had to short circuit this thing now. So if you could share with us that part as to what are the deadlines in terms of you wanting to be a good guy as well in just acceding to this thing. And I think you also, if you could just share a bit about, I think the Protocol 5, you're asking us to consent to accede. Is that the first step of that protocol, or we at another process? Is that the first process of that protocol? Therefore, Chair, so that we are able to factor this into our own programs, parliamentary programs. And I think that's where my concern would be if we look at the framework of our program in Parliament as well to be able to handle these matters. It's quite important that they indicate and openly tell us the time pressures now that they have if the snail mail is anything to go by for us as well. So that is a good trend that is set. Thanks.
Dr. Gumbi, you can respond.
Thank you. On the question of Protocol 5, Protocol 5 has been signed and it has entered into force with the exclusion of South Africa because we did not indicate that we want to be bound by it. So, as you all know, in any treaty, there is a benchmark number that once you reach this number, the protocol or whatever instrument will enter into force. So it has entered into force. What we are seeking is to be bound by it post facto. And that's why we participate in the meetings of this Protocol 5 as observers. Because we have not said we want to be bound by it. So we just sit and observe. But then, because of the kind of things they want to achieve, they say you cannot sit here and observe without helping us achieve the goal, which is to address the whole issue of explosive remnants of war. That's why this, if you may, token contribution of 1,000, which we have clearly indicated, is towards conference services and documentation. We get the interpretation, we get the documentation, so we have to pay for that in a way. That explains the observer part and the signing and the entry into force. We have not yet accepted to be bound by it. Therefore, we just sit there because we are in a region which is awash with these explosive remnants of war, so that we are aware of the thinking that goes in there, and we can also influence some of the thinking that goes in there so that it's not against our interests and policies, hence the observer part. Now, on the civil society aspect, ma'am, I must say that
we will try, by all means, maybe to list out something that clearly spells out how South Africa, not only South African, but Southern African civil society has been involved in the whole question of the promotion of the CCW. An institute that would be better placed maybe to best outline this is the Institute for Strategic Studies, which has been in the forefront in terms of involving civil society in the context of the CCW. Now, as to the implications of these amendments and the consent to be bound, I want us to please approach this from the following premise, that we are making a political statement to say there is a desirable instrument which seeks to address an acute problem within our region. Therefore, we do concur with the political objectives, aims, and principles of the whole thing as it is. But as to the details, because that's left to each country's sovereign right to determine within its national legislation, constitution, and all that, how it would then operationalize the aspects of the protocol. I had indicated that certain countries choose that, okay, in the context of all this convention, I can only be bound by article so-and-so, by protocol so-and-so, because they take into account their capabilities and all that. Then we would have to look into that, and believe in me, with the ever-diminishing resources, obviously the role of the defense community will be little, but we do have the capabilities of doing outreach activities within our region to say, look, you also have to act responsibly by not allowing ABC. And industry, defense industry in particular, has a bigger role to play than even government in the context of all this, because they are the ones that produce, they are the ones that transfer. And in the context of the NCCA, would therefore be able to address those issues. As to the deadlines, we are not bound by any deadline as yet of when to be good guys or bad guys. We are already good guys politically, because the political goodwill to act on a matter that is stabilizing the region, that is putting back prosperity on a matter that prevents people from making good and optimal use of the land, we have said, yes, we support this. We have said in our statements in all this fora, but what is left is to provide the legal pen on paper kind of document to say, yes, now we are going to be bound by Protocol 5. Yes, we accept amendment to Article 1. But politically, the world out there knows that we are a responsible player. And secondly, we mean good. And thirdly, we will get on board. But the question is when. Honorable Mercy, I completely concur that maybe there might be a need for another session. And on the question of an explanatory note on Amendment 1 and Protocol 5. And I think that if we meet with that objective in mind, we would have achieved a lot, because we've moved into a tremendous shift from the conceptual stage now to the unpacking of what is contained there, so that we pave the way forward. And I think this has not been a total failure. It has been something. There's been a meeting of their minds, and now what we have to do is just to unpack what does this really mean in detail. And as I've said, answers might not be there satisfactorily and in a very exhaustive manner, because government alone cannot address this conclusively and decisively. Civil society will have to be involved. But ours is to make the necessary political statement that we, yes, we accept the amendments as envisaged in Article 1, and that, yes, we are prepared to be bound by Protocol 5. And then the details would provide later. As to the reporting and all that, of course, there are a few treaties that we have not been reporting on. We are counted as one of those countries that provides a report on implementation. Even things like 1540 of the Security Council, which are mandatory, some other countries, even developed countries, are saying, you know what, this is too tedious. But as South Africa, we are known to have been that country which attempts to respond at all times on what we have done to realize the objectives of the treaty. Yes, reporting will have to be done. And yes, we'll report that we are still in the process of seeking acceptance, consent. And once we have gotten that, we'll report that we are in the process of setting the national mechanisms that will translate the theory into practice, the political commitment into practical action. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Kumsi. Honorable members, the questions and concerns raised suggest that indeed we need another engagement with all stakeholders, as it has been suggested. And we have run out of time, and I think we have to come to the end of the meeting, and I will hand over to Honorable Ngesi to close the meeting. Honorable Kochi.
Thanks. No, let me reiterate. The session was very helpful. It's the first engagement. It has started opening up the issues. When the members are raising concerns and queries, it doesn't mean that we're saying the session was useless. No, this session was very useful to me. And certainly we look forward to quickly organizing another session. We don't have a long lapse again. That is, will be from ourselves now, and we'll just simply invite the department. Let's thank the officials of the department for this useful information. I think that, as the chair has declared, is the end of the first session. Back to our separate committees. We will let me also thank everybody who has been able to make this joint session a success. Then we will move into our sessions. And international relations and cooperation, we're going into M201 to consider just one item. I'll leave the others to you, Chief. Thank you.